Good morning, boys and girls, moms and dads, children of all ages, ships at sea, and reporting here live and direct from the top of Mount St. Port Charlotte. Yes, overlooking the grand Teton mangrove islands of Charlotte Harbor. And what a bunch of noise he makes on that guitar. All right, now we've got Fish and Frank here in the chair. We got Vinny in the chair across me. We're going to discuss a little bit about grouper fishing and hooks and legalities and all this other kind of stuff. So anyway, if I can get Frank to stop. All right, there we go. We're stopped. Hey, Vinny.
Hey, Frank.
All right. Had a phone call from a guy. Went out a charter, and the guy said, you're not allowed to use wide gap circles. It has to be round circles. You ever heard of that?
I've never heard of that.
It's circles, you know, kind of a circle, isn't it?
My understanding is if you're fishing reef fish, you need a circle hook, and it can't be a offset circle hook. It needs to be an inline circle hook, and whether it's wide gap or not, I've never heard of that being an issue.
No, it's the definition, you know, to me. They have a law in the Gulf of Mexico for bottom fish. Now, this law does not apply to amberjack or the tuna or the mackerel or one of these other ones. But if you're fishing a reef species, which would be the grouper, snapper, grunts, all those families, it has to be a circle hook. And a J hook, literally, it's pretty easy because you have the eye. And if you're holding the hook with the eye up, the point of the hook would point straight up in the air. That's like the letter J.
Yep.
And a circle hook is pretty much exactly the same thing, but when it comes to the very point of the hook, just the first eighth inch of the tip of the point is bent back towards the shank of the hook. And no matter how if you want to make the bottom of it square or, you know, half of a quadrangle or wide gap or round or whatever, as long as the tip of that hook, the point of it, points back at the shaft, not straight up, it is a circle hook.
Yeah, and as long as that circle hook stays in line with the shaft and isn't offset one way or the other, it's perfectly legal.
Now, the only way, if you're wondering how do I tell if my circle hooks are in line or offset, easiest thing to do is lay it on the table, and when you lay the hook on the table, with the eye off of the table, off the edge of the table, and then put your fingers on it. If it rocks back and forth, it's an offset. Technically, not a legal hook. If you lay the circle hook on the table, and obviously the eye has to be off of the edge of the table, otherwise it'll rock. But with the part of the hook excluding the eye on the table and it lays flat, it's an inline hook. And that's Florida legal. Now, on the packs, circle hooks, they either say tournament legal, Florida legal, inline. Any of those statements would say the same thing. Inline circle hooks are the legal circle hook to use. The offset circle hooks, so many people use them, and I don't even think most of the marine patrol knows which one to look for. They're looking to see if you have a circle on there. I'm not sure that a lot of the guys are even defining it down to offset and non-offset, but to be perfectly conform to the legal option, your circle hook should not rock if it's laid on a flat surface, and that's in line.
Yeah.
Now, to me, circle hooks are great, but my big debate is I hate them. I absolutely abhor circle hooks for most things, and the reason is I can't get them out of the fish. I think, and here's the big thing about when they say Florida, is that if you're catch and releasing and you're not keeping the fish, you can use a J hook, a circle hook, or whatever hook you want to use. But if you're going to keep the fish to eat, you have to use a circle hook. Now, the thinking behind this is that the state of Florida thought the venting tool, the round hook remover, and the circle hook were all good ideas because they were supposedly the best catch and release hooks. Remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. But if you're going to catch and release, you can use whatever hook you want, but if you're going to catch them and take them home for dinner, you have to use the circle hook. Now, is there a part of that that makes sense?
Well, I'm just trying to imagine hopping in my boat and going 35 miles offshore and catching grouper with a J-hook, thinking for 1 minute that I don't want to bring that home.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, so. No, I get it. I mean, we want to keep and eat grouper, so it does work, but it's part of the, really? You know, okay, this they say is the best catch and release hook, which all of the other little laws they put together at the same time are now void and null. They no longer are in effect, but they have kept the circle hook thing. But now me, I think I kill more fish trying to get that stupid hook out of it, out of a fish, because trying to get a circle hook out of something when the head's right there. If it happens hooking the jaw, it's not bad, but if it hooks in the head part, how do you get it out?
Yeah, you know, Frank, my, at least my experience using circles, I don't like the inline circle at all. I think I lose more fish with it than I do with a J-hook, but I like to use, if I'm going to use a circle, the offset circle. And I realize you can't use that offshore targeting grouper and things, but if I'm going to use a circle when I'm fishing, when say in the
legal.
Harbor,
when it's legal, yes,
I'll go with an offset every time if I'm using a circle.
And to me, I like a Kaley hook, the original wide gap Kaley hooks, the 37-140 Mustad, because it always hooks in the corner of the mouth and I can set it.
Yeah.
And technically, I'm not sure if that would be considered a circle hook or not, because it point does point back. It's not a J hook. Now, that's something I could get a hold of FWC about and find out if those hooks are considered circle.
Boy, if they were, I'd start stocking up on them.
Yeah, because
I'd use them.
God, they work so much better than the standard circle hook. You can set them or not set them, and it's the best in-between hook I've ever found. It's the only hook I use below a bobber.
Yeah.
I don't like any other hook below a float. I mean, it's just such a good setting hook. That's a question to bring to FWC. See, we did something good on this show.
Well, we haven't got to the finish line, but
no, but
we thought of something.
Now we have a good question to ask. So I always like having questions. It leads me to another answer. So anyway, we're talking about the hooks on grouper, inline offset and all that kind of stuff. Have you been out grouper fishing lately?
You know, I haven't been grouper fishing in a month, but a lot of the guys in our club have.
Okay.
And they've been doing pretty good. I think it's actually turned on. Most of them are having to still go pretty far out. You know, we're talking 35 miles, you know.
Yeah, you're looking for 100 feet or better of water. I mean, 90's okay, but
the closer you get to 100. They're getting into 100, 110 feet is what they're getting into to get, you know, some nice grouper, though. Last week, some of the guys went out, and they came back with 33-inch red grouper.
Yeah, that's 10 to 20 pound grouper in the
These are nice ones,
really nice fish,
but they're, you know, everyone's still having to work hard and they're having to go far, and you know, I don't know if that's just the way it is every year at this time.
I think it's El Nino.
Yeah,
well, the water temperature, believe it or not, and El Nino's brought the water temperature at this time of year. Normally, historically, by the calendar, they should be much closer, but because of the water temp, they're further out.
I know this time last year, Greg and I and Dwayne went out, and we went out of Placida, and we're in, you know, small bay boat.
Right.
Good day, but we didn't go very far. We were probably 15 miles out, and we were getting into keeper grouper.
Yep.
And but this year, I haven't heard anybody, you know, getting into any keepers at that distance.
See, it falls back to my one rule is, we as humans, you know, especially as citizens of the United States, we are used to watches, calendars, clocks. You know, we know the day, the week, the month, the hour of everything. But unfortunately, nobody gave the fish those tools for monthly identification. So without knowing that, all they do is water temp. And with this year as different as it was last year, that's where the big thing came in, because last year the water was a completely different temperature at this point, so you could go out and be much closer to shore and still get those amazing fish.
Yeah.
This year the water warmed up a bit and it pushed them out, and all the fronts and everything else. Storm fronts affect the water from 30 feet and less. If it's very drastic pressure changes in the foot, 2 foot of water, going down to about 30 feet, and then it really quits having much effect after 30 feet because that's another atmosphere of pressure.
And, you know, I don't know if this had anything to do with it. I'm pretty sure it has, but, you know, we had a lot of rain this winter, more so than ever before.
And it pushed that brown water going out of the pass 12 miles at one point.
Right.
So that's a lot of fresh water. And then the temperature, the fresh water, that's a good point. Because that brown water, there was for about a month, there was an actual visible line between the blue-green water of the Gulf and the brown water coming out of the backcountry.
Yeah. I know I was probably 12 miles out when we finally, it just changed. And you started getting into the blue water.
Yeah.
It was a long line of the dark water.
We used to see that quite often. When you're leaving the upper harbor going out towards Boca Grande Pass, you would actually see a line of brown and green right there.
Yep.
And it's just weird to think of that 12 plus miles out into the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
So that might have been the biggest thing about pushing those fish out. That's a really good point. And add that to the temperature and then your rain and a lot of storm fronts and stuff. That if you combine all three of them, that's probably the most likely reason. I don't think it's any one of them, but maybe a combination of all.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, see, we're getting the affairs of the world worked out here, Vinny.
We have.
Yeah.
Now, we are, you know, in the club, the guys are starting to get onto the Kings. They're, you know, they're moving, you know, anywhere from, what, a mile to 3 miles off the beaches.
That's
real
close.
Starting to get into them.
Yeah. It's amazing to me that they are that close. I don't know. What are they doing to get the Kings interested in it right now? Trolling?
Trolling. Yeah.
Anything?
Bomber, you know, bombers, even the, you know, that 5-inch twitch stick, you know, but any kind of hard plastic that's got a little shine to it, trolling it behind the boat.
So now you're up to using the bigger twitch stick. You were using the smaller one. Now you're on to the bigger one.
Offshore. Yeah, the 5-inch.
So you're on the larger size. Any of the colors on the twitch working better than others?
White is, you know, there was a point in time when the white stopped. It seemed like it wasn't working as good, say for the last, say, 6 months. But it seems like it's picking up again and starting to catch, you know, snook, as well as getting it offshore and catching fish.
Oh, because of the success of that Ghost, the white-gray, the other colors now are kicking off because a lot of people had the exact same experience. The white wasn't working and they went on to do the green and white and the blue and silver and all the other colors, and they were catching a lot of fish with them, and now the white seems to be coming back on again.
Yeah. And I think in the harbor it's going to start to pick up as the white bait starts to come in. You know, we still don't have a lot of white bait in the harbor yet.
Right.
But
I did get on the thing here, and St. Petersburg is 75 degrees. Naples is 75.4. Now, Key West is 76.8. I was looking for, I don't know, I had it right there a minute ago, St. Pete. Okay, yeah, 75 in St. Pete. So our Gulf temp is 75 degrees, and that's getting right on the borderline of keeping those fish out.
Yeah.
They seem to like that 68, you know, that around 70 more than 75. Now, 75 is historically when our shark, our tarpon, all the cobia, this is the prime water temps for all of our big species coming in.
Yeah.
So you're talking king mackerel still, because 75 is good. They like 68, 72, and 75 is not going to move them out yet. I should check Pensacola. Pensacola is not available for some reason. Okay, so Dolphin Island up there, Alabama, is 72, so they're only a few degrees off. It's remarkable to me how close we are going to be in a little while to the panhandle. Shows you the dramatic differences. Years ago, when we were 75, they would still be 65, 68. And usually by June, we're matching temperatures with the panhandle.
Mm-hmm.
That's what keeps these kings here so much longer. They used to follow that prime water temp. Well, they get up to us, and then it just doesn't change much going north. And that holds them here more. And a lot of them get further north, and it starts warming up there. I think they start coming back south, hoping, maybe I'll find cooler water down here. They don't like that hot water that much.
Yeah.
So, good king mackerel, using the 5-inch storm twitch. What else is going on for what complimentary lures that are you trolling out there with the Storm Twitch?
I'll take and put a spoon behind the bomber.
Oh yeah,
that rig that you showed me how to do. Yep. Right, and that's been working good, and it's been catching a lot of Spanish.
Yeah, that's now. Have you pulled a cedar plug lately?
No, but I've got them in my arsenal. I haven't used it yet.
Okay, and I just find it absolutely staggeringly ridiculous that the one I do the best on is the one that has plain lead on the front and is wood, unpainted wood, cedar, yeah, with a hook on it.
I keep meaning to use that. You know, I've got it on the boat, and I keep wanting to rig it up, but I haven't done it. I got to do that.
Yeah, you... Best bet, though, is make sure you use one of those AFW ball bearing snaps on it, because it does tend to spin.
Does it?
Yeah, it'll mess your line up. I always make sure that I attach the leader it comes with to a ball bearing swivel. And preferably a Sampa would be the best, or a Spro, or the AFW. AFWs work about 80% as well and cost about half as much.
Yeah.
So I usually fish the AFW. But, all right, so we got that. Anybody using any tuna skirts or poppers or anything like that out there?
I'm not aware of it. No, right.
Mostly
I haven't.
Mostly lures with a lip on them. The Bombers, the Storm Twitch.
Yeah.
The Rapala's got a whole bunch of good ones. Now, if I'm out there, I'm going to take some of those nice Rapalas that we got in. I'm going to put 20 down and maybe at least a 15 or 20, yeah, down as my low one as an attractor. I'm using that more for a teaser, and then I'll put my other ones up above it. But I like having one down a little deeper that really makes a lot of noise.
I got a question for you, Frank. When you're running, you know, a lot of times, and it gets a little complicated when it's just Darlene and I on the boat, but I'll try to have maybe four lines out as I'm trolling.
And I always do that. That's how I fish.
The deeper divers, say the 30.
Right.
Are you going to run that ahead of the shallow divers, directly below them, further behind them? How do you normally set those up?
Well, what I do is that the bigger the lure, the easier it is to get it down. So my back right rod holder, because usually most boats have two on the back corners and then two further up closer to midships. And that back right is where I put my deepest one, because I'm going to send that one down as far as possible. Once that one's down where I want it, a lot of times I'll let it tag the bottom a little bit and then give it about two or three cranks up, just so it's kind of 4 to 6 feet, 2 to 4 feet off the bottom. And then I set my second line, which is in the back one. And now that one's going to be about half the distance of that one. So I want it to go back further and be up a little higher. And now I'm going back to the one that has that 30 on it, that side of the boat, back to the right side, because that one's really got the rod bent over good. So I'm taking a little longer rod, like I got a 5.5 foot rod in the back, or 5.8, and it's bent. So now I can put a 6.5 or a 7 in that front rod holder, and that one's going to be about a 6 foot lure, 4 to 6 foot lure right there. And then on the other side, that's going to be the one furthest back with the smallest lure on it, because the little tiny lips takes a lot more line to keep in the water, but they can go over the top of the two that are in the back because they've got more pressure on them. And so
okay,
back right, back left, mid right, mid left, and that's, but the closest to the boat is the deepest, heaviest one, and the furthest from the boat is the lightest, smallest one.
Got it.
But that's how I set them up, because that way I'm covering from way down deep and the lures are coming up. And if I've got an extra rod holder, I like taking the small, like an 06 or 09 Rapala X-Wrap or the Storm Twitch, but something that size and smaller, the 14 Bomber, and I'll run it on a regular spinning rod right out through the middle of them and get it kind of halfway between my last two, because that's where all the activity is. And so I've got that fifth line up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, you've got to be careful, because if you turn that wheel a little too hard, you've got one tangled up nightmarish mess.
Yeah.
And so now if I see a pot of bait and I'm going to do a big circle around it, I got two lines out. I've seen the circle, so I know they're not deep. So I eliminate any of the deep ones, put two lines out the back, one a little closer and one quite a bit further back, and bring the boat around a very slow big circle trying to come by that school each time. And but I do that with just two lures, because any more than that you got a tangle up nightmare. And they're not down deep. So that's a good place to put your spoon, the bomber spoon rig, the storm twitches, because if they're up by the top busting on bait, it's usually smaller bait fish. They don't want anything big, because those are feeding on glass minnows and white bait and stuff like that. The bigger bait would be down farther.
So, Frank, I want to tap the brain trust while I got you here. I recently put a downrigger on my boat. I've not used it yet. My plan, the first time I actually am going to use it, was to go out to the Blue Hole.
Right.
And the approach I was going to take was to attach either a spoon or even a bomber at the weight of the downrigger, get up to the edge of the Blue Hole, stop, drop that downrigger all the way till I hit bottom, bring it up, say 5 feet, and then start a troll, just a slow troll across the Blue Hole and the ridges and things, and just work that bait across the hole and across those ridges. That's the approach I was going to take, and I'm a rookie at this, so I'm kind of curious.
You're going to have to really keep an eye on your depth finder and have somebody on the crank of that thing. Now, from the downrigger ball, there's a release clip off of that.
Yep.
Now, so your rod's next to that. So literally, you're kind of dual cranking because you don't want a lot of extra slack. From the downrigger ball out to my bait, I usually have about 15 feet of line. That's the least I feel comfortable with, because I don't want them right there by that ball. Sometimes I'll use the ball and I'll double rig it, and I'll use a heavier leader. I'll put a smaller lure just off of the ball, because sometimes it actually gets their attention. And just behind the clip, I'll put a smaller leader, and then coming out back to my other one. But I'm not really pulling spoons down that far, because spoons, A, they're going to sink right to the bottom if you pause or turn, and I don't want that. So I'm going to go with something more like a bomber or a storm twitch on there. Something that, as I move, gives me more action. The problem is you got to watch that, because you're going way down into that hole. I would start before I got to the hole, mm-hmm. and then release the ball down with the have the drag backed off on the spinning reel, so it will go down, and then, but you've got to have it be able to come up, because you're bringing up and down the line as well as the downrigger ball.
Right,
it's pretty complicated. Downrigger balls only troll up to about 3 miles an hour before they start getting flaky. You get the ones with the fins on them,
right?
You can get kind of up to four, but the bulk of the ball itself tends to make them swing side to side with the current. They don't want to track straight. That's why we usually use a number four or bigger planer as my saltwater downrigger, because I can pull it faster without it swinging all over the place.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with the downrigger ball, is you got to go slow. They're really made for 1 to 3 miles an hour.
Yeah.
As soon as you start breaking over three, now you get a lot of swing. So you can only have that one bait down there, because that thing will, you'll see, it'll really start to go as you're pulling. But then you've got to, as that bottom comes up, because you're dealing that Blue Hole, that's what, 100 and some feet deep?
Right.
And then all of a sudden it's coming back up, and then it's coming up, and then it's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to be on it. It's like fishing boat or Grand Pass. You're 80-foot hole, then you come up to about 35 feet, then down to 40, and then up to 30. And so you're going to be doing a lot of cranking.
Yeah, I've marked all around it where I've got marks where the different depths are that I can kind of follow. And so I've got that in place on my chart system now. But I'm just curious on the approach. I appreciate you telling me, because again, I'm kind of green when it comes to a downrigger, but I'm going to give it a shot.
Well, if you know you've got a certain amount of depth for a certain, you know, length that you know to run, you're pretty much golden. You just set it down there. But I'd use something with a lip on it. I would use a spoon.
Okay.
I'd use something with a lip that has some flotation or suspending ability. Problem with any of the ones like spoons or jigs, as soon as you pause or something, it wants to drop, and that's going to get you snagged.
Yeah.
That's the thing I would be avoiding. And the other thing is, I think the one with a lip on it's going to give you a little bit of swimming action. As long as you've got movement, you've got action, and action is sound.
Got it.
So I'm just thinking that'd be it, but I think in an ideal world, it would be a rigged ballyhoo. You know what I mean? Meat, oh, lunch.
You know, actually, I thought about that, and Bert just putting a ballyhoo behind it.
I'm almost thinking I would rather do that than having the lure with the lip on it. But I don't know. It's hard to say. It's a really cool proposition because I haven't fished a blue hole in years, and I like the aspect that it must be a volcano or a sinkhole that happened out there, and it's just this big drop. And how cool would that? I wish my ears were better. I'd love to dive that thing and actually see it down to the bottom.
Yeah.
Why don't you buy us a submarine so we can go look at this?
We'll do that. I'll just
get us a
submersible. I'll check with the boss.
All right. Get us a submersible. One of those with the plexiglass so we could just drive down there and check it out.
But
so what? How was the downrigger idea came into play? Just because of the depth specific?
Yeah. You know, thinking, you know, a lot of the lures I've got, you know, they're not going to run down there. You're not going to get them down that deep. And my thinking is there's probably some really nice amberjack romping around in the depths of that hole that I can't get to without a downrigger.
How deep is the hole that you're in? How deep are you thinking about running?
About 95.
All right. There's a trick I do with a planer. And if I know where I'm going to be running, I measure off some light rope, basically. I use a rope and I'll tie it off to the cleat at 95 feet and then just let it run down through my hand, that big planer.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's down there at 95 feet. And the neat part about the planer is I use the same release clip as the downrigger. It's got that, but it also, when the fish hits, sometimes it will trip on its own and actually get out of my way. So, you know, but you literally, because of the depth, you have to pre-tie the rope to the cleat and to the planer and then let that, you know, slide through your hand and have a good glove on, because you're talking about 95 feet, that's going to get a little hot.
Yeah.
But you could do it with a number 4 planer.
Yeah.
And maintain almost any speed. But going slow, it might work on the other side of the boat. You might be able to pull off two of them. I'd start with just the downrigger because you already have it. And if it works good, it lessens. I bet you with the line, the rope, and everything for $20, you could probably have a second one.
Well, what I'm hoping is that that downrigger doesn't just become something that's sitting on the shelf in the garage and I don't use it anymore. You know, I've always wanted one. I want to give it a try. I just hope it doesn't become more of a headache.
Trolling for grouper with little lures, because you know how effective like the 5-inch storm is and the small storm.
Yeah.
Trolling for grouper and snapper and stuff with those offshore with a downrigger, ideal.
Yep.
Because at 2-3 miles an hour, they still work great. And you can get those right up off the bottom, especially parallel on some of our ledges where, you know, you've got those 1.5-2 foot ledges and you want to run right over them. At that speed, you could stay on the ledge and have that little lure that's so tasty for those fish right there in front of their face.
Yep.
So I think you could use it if you want to get creative.
Yep. Well, we're going to give it a shot next time we go out.
All right. You been out in the harbor lately?
A little bit. We've been, you know, the fish of the month in our club, snook, and we've talked about that a couple times already. So the times that we have been out, and it's only been a couple times, we've been targeting snook.
Isn't it funny how life gets in the way of our fishing?
It is lately, you know. I got all this executive responsibility here at Frank's, you know, and
and the president of the largest fishing club in South Florida, so.
Oh, that's, you know, that's a lot of pressure, too. A
lot of pressure, yes.
So, but it is amazing, you know.
The joke behind that is that you were in charge of literally international corporations and tens of thousands of people working and all this, and now you're here. It's just funny.
It's
a better
fun.
Change in life. Yes.
It's actually fun. But it is funny, though, where you, just little things that you got scheduled that you got to take care of, and that's the day you need to get, should have been going fishing, and then the days when I'm free and we're ready to go. The weather, the wind, whatever, haven't been able to get out.
Yeah, because Andrew's getting ready to start chartering, and I promised him we'd get that boat done, so I took couple days. I need to take a day off from my 2 days off out of the store. I'm not used to climbing in and out of boats. I will say that we have built him the most unique charter, inshore charter vessel out there. It's got beautiful seating for like six customers. So four people, you're going to feel like you're in the Taj Mahal. I mean, it's big. It's not beautiful, but it's big and it's comfortable. It's very nicely done and everything's really clean and good. But down each side, because I was like, if you got a 24-foot boat, why are you fishing off of that 6-foot point in the front? Why don't you broadside to where you want to anchor up and cast off the side?
Yeah.
So everybody has a place to sit down. And in front of them, there's a cup holder with the storage thing next to it. So you can put a sandwich and a drink there in that. And right next to it's a rod holder for every place. I mean, there's six of them down each side. It's absolutely amazing.
I'm looking forward to seeing Andrew, you know, get out there and start chartering. I think he's going to be a good captain and do a good job.
Well, I'm going to be running out with him and teaching him how to come up to a spot with that big boat, and I use an anchor and a stickit in combination. It's pretty hard to do with two stickits. It's easier for me with an anchor because I have that longer rope. I come up, I shut the boat off, and as I'm drifting in, I drop my anchor off the back, and then when I get right about where I want the back of the boat, I'll tie it off to the cleat, take the stickit pin, go around to the front, move the front of the boat around, and stick the front of the boat right where I want it. Because if I'm drifting in, either the current or the wind is pushing me, so I hold right there.
Mm-hmm.
But it allows me to bevel that boat back and forth. And what's nice is I, off the anchor line, I can let out a little rope or take in a little rope easier than I can trying to push it with a stickit or something like that.
Yeah.
But I got to use that stickit on the front. But now you got 24 feet of room. So if you got four customers, that's a lot of space for everybody to fish. And they're all on one side, so I have the entire other side of the boat to run up and down on. So if somebody in the front needs me, I can get there, and I'm not trying to get in between people and everything because I got everybody on one side. Hmm. That's the way I always did charters myself. So I'm teaching him those techniques.
Good deal.
So you have to go out and be part of the test runs with us, getting Andrew ready to go be a captain.
I'd like to try it.
Yeah, it'd be fun to give him a hard time. Can you tie this for me?
Yeah, unsnagged.
Get this out for me. I love doing that when I got new captains I'm training. Yeah, I throw it right up in the trees and say, but that's my favorite lure. Make him go up in there and get it. Oh, aren't you glad?
Yeah, I think he's got the right temperament for the job, so he'll do all right.
I think he's going to be a great captain, yeah. I think it's going to all be pretty good. Anything else we should talk about today?
How about tarpon?
All right, tarpon.
You know, our club does, I'm not wanting to toot our horn, but I will, does a really good job communicating within the club what's going on with tarpon. And a lot of the guys and gals have been, you know, watching very closely and, you know, actively going out after the tarpon and seeing where they're at. I know just in the last few days, some of the guys have caught some big tarpon in the harbor.
So, any idea what they're using?
It's a club secret, Frank, and we can't share it.
Okay. You'd tell me, but then you'd have to kill me, right?
But, you know, they're using baits, live baits.
Okay.
And, I guess the headlines are the tarpon are starting to move into the harbor. A lot of them, they've been getting on them at night. And but now they're starting to get on them during the day. So I would expect we're going to start seeing a lot of tarpon getting landed here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I've got a lot of the captains talking about tarpon. We're planning on doing a bunch of stuff with them. The tarpon map will be up either today or tomorrow, our yearly, you know, what the tarpon are doing map. So that'll be up here in the next day or so. It's kind of 75 is that magic number, the water temp 75. That's before that, once the water hits around 70, we start seeing a few fish come up and we get a few stragglers come in. But that 75 is really the kickoff switch to the mass influx. But it's so early this year, like I've said 1,000 times years ago, I would tell people, well, you really want to be here by the second week of May, because by then we'll have tarpon. And this year in March, we had some, heck, we had a bunch of them in December,
mm-hmm.
but because they never left. and then January it got cold and rainy and everything left, and now it's been coming back. But really, it's at 75 degree mark, and so it's proving right again.
And the, you know, the bait fish, it looks like we're starting to see some white bait moving in. I know there have been some reports of actually getting white bait out around Two Pines, and I haven't heard any stellar reports on greenbacks. But
a lot of thread fins.
Thread fins everywhere.
Yeah, there's a lot of thread fins, which is a good sign. The way you tell the difference, boys and girls, is literally when you pick the fish up, if your hand's full of little tiny scales, it's a thread fin. And they both have green backs, and that's what confuses a lot of people. But when you take the dorsal fin right in the middle of their back and just kind of pinch it between your fingers lightly and run it up, you'll see a very long extension, or where they get their name from, thread fin. It's got a long thread that comes off of the dorsal. Now, that is not, it is a white bait, but it's not what we refer to as a greenback. A greenback is heavier, bulkier, hard scale sardine. The thread fins are a soft scaled sardine. And if you want to keep thread fins alive in your live well, do not have the jet of water pounding into the water. Take the head of your live well, turn it up towards the roof of the live well, and let the water pump in and rain down. And it's that pressure that blows the scales off, and they all die. And we don't want to kill any more than we have to. So it's a simple matter. Make sure you have a rotating head on your live well, and just don't put the pressure spraying into the water. And they'll live fine for you all day.
Well, you know, we had Danny Latham speak at our club this month, and we were talking about thread fins. And, you know, he doesn't necessarily have an issue using thread fins as a bait. The bigger issue he had was you can't cast them as far because they're pretty much a flat, thin fish.
They weigh about, if you have a 3-inch thread fin and a 3-inch white bait or greenback, the thread fin weighs less than half of what the greenback does.
Right.
So a good way to do it is a water-fillable casting bubble. You know, and you can fill that half full of water, throw it out there, and it act as a little bit of a bobber. I've got some smaller ones ordered so that you can literally fill them with water and cast them out. It's very heavy in the air, but when it hits the water, it's really nothing. So it's a way of putting a weight on without putting a weight on for throwing thread fins, because they're becoming the predominant bait. So we're kind of getting ahead of that. And I've already ordered a bunch of the tiny water-fillable casting bubbles. And what you do is put it on your leader before you tie the leader to your line, so it'll go between the knot and the hook. And that way, when you throw it, and then the thread fin should be able to swim around without having a major issue.
Yeah.
It would be a lot lighter than even a small split shot. So that's how we're going to get around being able to throw those thread fins. But I got to... waiting for the little tiny casting bubbles to come. Yeah. But I did order them. So, hey, cheers for me. I'm ahead of the game once.
Frank, are you getting any reports of the snook spawning?
Not so much yet, but they could be. It's the water temp's right. It's about a month early, but man, what does months mean anymore?
Month early.
Yeah. May and June are the primary spawning times, but they'll start in April, because you got April, May, and June where the snook are going to spawn. And so you will start seeing a lot of empty fish. You catch these big fish that are 40-some inches and barely weigh more than 10 pounds because they'll have nothing inside of them. They've already spawned out and they're done. That's why every trophy fish, we've heard a lot of people complaining about, well, guys catching this fish or that fish. Well, it was during spawn, but every trophy fish on record has always been during the spawning season.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, that's when they're heavy. I've got one on the wall in front, a skin mount snook from years ago, and it was a very light fish, but I'd caught it at the beginning of August. And the guy who was mounting those fish was going to retire, and he told me I had a week to get him a fish. So, you know, 43 and a half was as good as I could find in that week, and beginning of August. So, but it was very light. It was probably at least 10 pounds lighter than what it would have been if I would have caught it in this time of year.
Yeah.
So, but I wasn't looking for a record. I was just looking for a big fish to mount.
Well, you got it.
So, anyway, why? What's up with the snook spawning?
Well, just curious, because, you know, I've been wanting to get out on the beach and maybe try to catch some snook off the beach when they're spawning. We did that a few years ago. It was a blast.
Now,
and I'm just looking for the right time.
is starting now through the end of June is the right time for that. What I like to do is I take the old-fashioned mirror lure, the TT18, and you can use the MR17s and all that, but I used to do it with the TT18, and throw it right up. I take my boat and get a good cast away from the sand and throw my lure right onto the sand.
Yep.
And then just start working it out right in, because most of the time I'm getting hit within 6 feet of the sand coming out from the beach, right, and just keep casting them out. Or you can drive out to the beach in the morning or evening and go out about knee deep and just cast right along the shoreline.
That's the experience we had. This was a couple of years ago. We got up on the beaches and we were using greenbacks. And mm-hmm. we were casting that greenback, almost landing them on the sand, and then just bringing it back. And again, once you get maybe 5-6 feet off the beach, that's where we were catching snook.
Yep.
And it was fun. I mean, there were a lot of snook. It was, you know, it wasn't boring fishing at all.
Well, what you get is a whole bunch of the males all trying to find a female. And not all snook turn female. People think that it's a rule, but fish don't understand the rules people have for them. Some of the big snook are male. The majority of them are female. It's kind of like living in San Francisco. As they grow up, all of a sudden the males turn to females. And it's one of those weird things several of the fish do, but not all of them do that. So you can find big snook that are males, but this one female will have a dozen males hanging around her, all trying to get her attention. It's like ladies' night in a bar. There's five women and 400 guys there. So that's kind of the same thing on the beach, right? What's going to start happening now. And April, May, and June is when all that really is in its peak, maybe in the biggest month of the year.
Okay.
So, but we got to get out one night in the middle of the night and either get, you can do it at Gasparilla Pass, Captiva. I've done it most often at Stump Pass, but we get just inside of the pass and get over on the side and take some big rods, a whole ladyfish, 16, 18 inches long, and throw it up in about 3 feet of water with a 6 ounce, 8 ounce sinker on it, about 5 feet a leader, and let it sit up in there. And that's where you find those 40 to 50 some odd inch snook. And it's after dark. It's like shark fishing. Big sinker, big leader, just toss it up there and sit back and relax until the big fish hits. But when you're using a fish that big, it's always fun, because I'll never forget Norman, who was teaching me how to do that. All of a sudden it takes off on a run. And a snook hits different than all the other fish. And once you know it, you'll never forget it. But all of a sudden it picked it up and the clicker started going real slow, and it's just kind of that little buzzing of the clicker real slow, and it's going and it's going, and I'm like, Norm, what do I do? Just wait. And I'm like, and I know I gotta set the hook. It's a J hook. I gotta set the hook. And it's going buzz, clicker's going. And I'm like, now, Norm? Not yet. And keep going and keep going. And now, Norm? Not yet. Okay. And it's going and going and going. And all of a sudden, the snook will stop. And it's that stop. He's got the fish in his mouth. Now he figures he can turn it to get in it. Remember, they don't have hands or arms. Without hands and fingers, and you had this a hoagie sandwich bitten right in the middle, and now you've got to turn it so you can swallow it. And that's what they do. They'll turn it to swallow it, and then they take off with a burst of speed. Well, you got to be ready, because when it's that fish stops, he's turning in his mouth, and the minute he goes to take off, that's when you got to set the hook. And I'm sitting there, and the fish pauses. I'm like, now, Norm? Not yet. And all of a sudden, boom, the fish starts taking off. But the boat's to him, you know. And, it was amazing. Norm was one of those guys. If picture Frank Sinatra at his peak in the 50s or 60s with the suit and a little tie and all that kind of stuff, that was Norman. Slick back hair, you know. But what a snook fisherman.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's a little bit of insight into big fish snook fishing. But I guess we've kind of done this a little bit. I think we're about ready where we can come on, get back here. Alright the Boombadita music's on. This is Fish and Frank in the chair, and Vinny, host of his own show usually on Thursdays, but I decided we were going to sit in with Vinny today. And watch for Vinny's Mad World of Fishing on Thursdays right here on Radio Fishing. And we go catch you later. Say goodbye, Vinny.
All right. Bye, everybody. Thank you.